All right, well, let's jump into this because we've got, I think, like 40 minutes and to talk to you about everything about substance abuse. So that let me just tell you that if I'm just going to rush through a few things here, obviously I'm not even going to really touch on everything we need to know. We do a course here. I'll be teaching, in fact, in the spring, a course here at Southwestern on substance abuse. Whole semester, so you can imagine trying to do it in 40 minutes. In the training that we do on weekends, in level two of that training, I do about 3 hours on it, so at least it's a little bit a little bit better. But what I wanted to focus on today was specifically, since our topic is medications in terms of counseling and the psychiatric drugs that are used that tend to be used in counseling, is their abuse and the whole question of their use and abuse, particularly the abuse of them. And so that's where we're going to focus today on those, rather than just trying to talk about substance abuse in general and all those kinds of things. I'm going to talk about several headlines here, several articles that have come out very recently. And just to kind of talk about some of the things that we're finding out just based on secular studies about these medications that we are that we're using. And if you'd like a copy of any of these, feel free to email me, and I will be glad to send you a copy. I do have a copy of all of them here with me, but I'm certainly not going to read them all to you. But if you're interested in any of these, feel free to email me, and I'll be glad to send those to you. But an article that came out in March 2003 that centered around a study that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine talked about how in that particular study, and this is typical of studies that have been done. Remember, one of the things that Dr. Smith talked about last night was that studies should be, one of the things about studies is that they should be reproducible. And one of the things that has been pretty consistent is that at best it seems like some benefit comes to about half of the patients who use those. It also has come out, and this really came out a number of years ago, or was this information was available a number of years ago. What we're finding out is that it was kept secret for many years, kept hidden by the drug companies, and that's a whole other realm of discussion, and that's ethics in the world of research. Okay, there's a whole lot of ethical issues in the world of research and how research is done and how well it's done and who's sponsoring it and what that means. In fact, in this year's meeting of the American Psychiatric Association, you know, obviously their new version of the DSM that we've been talking about that's getting ready to come out was one of the big discussion points at that meeting. But another major discussion point was ethics and how the lack of ethics or the appearance of evil, as Scripture would put it, of these studies is beginning to make people question whether or not they can trust these medications that are coming out, and rightly so. But one of the things that has come out is that antidepressants that are supposed to be helping people deal with depression actually become a suicide risk for many folks. And in fact, the age group that happens mostly or most often in is 17 to 25-year-olds. A quote from this particular one article was based on a Food and Drug Administration study. And a quote from that study says, "Widely used antidepressants double the risk of suicidal behavior in young adults from around 3 cases per 1,000 to 7 cases per 1,000. So more than doubles among 17 to 25-year-olds. And so one of the issues is the risk of suicide. Another says the number of Americans taking antidepressants doubles. And this was a study that was comes out of the Archives of General Psychiatry, the journal called the Archives of General Psychiatry. And what it found was that in 1996, there were 13.3 million Americans taking antidepressants. In 2005, 27 million Americans were taking antidepressants, which is about 10% of the population. And so you've got more than double the number of people in a significant increase in percentage to now where about 10% of Americans are taking antidepressants at any given time. Another study that came out in the Journal of Pediatrics just this year, the first of this year, was a study to find out, to see, you know, what was really the, what one of the questions is that, as we've already seen, is are these antidepressants really doing anything physical for people? There's lots of theories. We've already talked about the fact why that, why those theories, for the most part, can't be proven. But one thing that was studied was to see if antidepressants really were doing anything any better than anything else would do. And the fact is that there were almost identical results from placebos that there were from antidepressants. What does that say? Well, that says certainly one interpretation of that, I think one legitimate and good interpretation of that, is that just the idea that they're getting help of some sort helps people deal with things like depression. And so, you know, placebos versus a medication that has lots of side effects, as we're going to see in just a minute. And then another article that came out actually, I think the journal that it's going to be in actually hasn't even come out yet, but this article was just 5 days ago, actually states that looked at different antidepressants to see if this fact up here was different for some antidepressants than others. And what this study found was that, in fact, no, and again, this is in the Journal of Pediatrics as well. This study is going to be in the Journal of Pediatrics. I think it actually is going to be in their upcoming issue. It hasn't actually come out yet. But basically says that there's no difference between antidepressants in terms of the suicide risk. They're just as strong in any of the popular, the most popular, most used antidepressants. And I can't remember now exactly how many of them they looked at, but they looked at a number of those that are used, the ones that are most often prescribed. And so no difference between those. Why, you know, what's the point of all that? Well, the point of all that is just to say that we are more and more prescribing in America drugs that have very negative side effects. What about children? Okay, what about some other drugs? This was a cartoon that I found. You know, one of the big issues in our schools and so forth is, well, how do we fight drugs? Well, on the one hand, we're telling kids, you know, you need to say no to drugs. On the other hand, we're telling kids you need to take drugs to solve your problems. Okay. And so the teacher is asking, did you take your Ritalin today, kids? And they're all saying, yes, we did, as they head into the classroom. And clearly there's a, and we're going to see in just a minute as we look at some actual studies dealing with substance abuse and the abuse of these drugs, that that's a real issue. The idea in, as kids grow up taking these drugs is that they're somehow safe. It's okay to use them, even to overuse and abuse them because they're prescribed by a physician. It's not like going out on the corner and buying, you know, crack cocaine from a dealer. I know I'm not supposed to do that. I say no to that. But this is being given to me by my parents and has been since I was a kid. But the fact is, these are still drugs that are stimulants and so forth that are being used by these kids and that we're giving to these kids. Well, let's look at some things, some studies that deal with our young people. Again, going back to February of 2006, and all these studies you'll notice are within the last, within the last 4 years. You know, in my research methods class, I tell my students you've got to find articles that are within the last 5 years or best, because that's your most recent research. And so I've tried to stick to that, and most of these are, all of these are 4 years or less in terms of when these studies came out. So they're all very, very recent drugs. And this particular headline that comes out of the Journal of, that's an article based on the study that was in the Journal of Drug and Alcohol Dependence. And I, by the way, I used the, I found the newspaper articles that dealt with them, because the newspaper article headlines are always better than the actual titles of the studies. The titles of the studies are really boring. You know, they're really long and really boring. So So these kind of make the newspapers do a better job of taking the study and kind of putting it into a really good headline that makes the point. And so you won't find a journal article that says, millions have misused ADHD stimulant drugs. That's not what the article is actually called. And so anyway, if you want either the Washington Post article or the study, or at least an overview of the study, let me know, and I'll be glad to send any of those to you. I have both of them. It's just these make better headlines. So in the Journal of Drug and Alcohol Dependence, it talks about how many young people have abused these substances, have taken these stimulants and misused them. And so in another article, A Rush to Medicate Young Minds, this was actually an article written by a pediatrician. She dares to talk about the fact that, number one, these drugs are being way overused, and number two, some of the things that should be done instead. And in fact, if you had just been in Dr. Ramirez's discussion of ADHD, you would have heard some of the very same things that he talked about, asking parents questions about things like about parenting. How do they parent their children? You know, what kinds of things are they letting them, you know, watch on TV? What kind of video games are they playing? What, you know, those kinds of things. And this is a secular pediatrician. As far as I know, I don't know if she's a Christian or not, but she doesn't talk about Christian faith in there. But nevertheless, she's making a point that it's just way too easy to say, you know, let's just medicate these kids and deal with the problem that way, rather than taking the time. And it's really a plea to parents and to physicians to take the time to find out what's really going on and find a real help for this particular child. Ritalin poses crime risk. Actually, an article that was written, I could only find a headline for it in the Daily Telegraph, which is a Melbourne, Australia newspaper, but it actually was an American study that was done. But again, it talks about actually an American journal called the Medical Observer. But it kind of the gist of it is, children who use Ritalin for a long period of time are at more risk of delinquency and study and substance abuse later in their lives. Researchers found there was a 27% greater risk of committing crime than "quote unquote" normative children, and again, normative as described by the medical community or the psychiatric community, not necessarily a biblical normative. And so, again, a rise of those who use Ritalin, both in substance abuse, and in other kinds of juvenile crimes as well. So. One of the things that we see is as a risk is a rise in all crime of juveniles. Here's some interesting studies. August 3rd, 2009, in USA Today, an article, study that comes out of the archives of general psychiatry as well, an earlier study that I talked about came from that. But it says that depression can hit even preschoolers. Okay? What are we talking about there? Well, according to this study, about 2% of preschoolers, those ages 2 to 6, or about 160,000 youngsters, it says, probably have depression in the United States. Okay, so we're talking about kids now 2 to 6. Well, you know, you may say, surely they're not giving antidepressant drugs to kids ages 2 to 6. Well, we'll see an article in just a second. Yes, they are. That's exactly who they're starting to give them to. Signs of depression noted in second graders. And by the way, these aren't exactly maybe in an order, but what I put them in was the order that the journal articles appeared. And this actually came out of Health Day News, but the article itself, the journal that it was printed in, that the study was printed in, was the Journal of Youth and Adolescents. A study done by the University of Washington Educational Psychology Department says that about 20% of second graders have depression, okay, or can be diagnosed as having depression. So study that says 2 to 6-year-olds a study that says second graders in great numbers have depression. Again, we keep moving forward. In MedPage today, which was the actual, which is the article where the article is found, but again, the journal is the Journal of Pediatrics, says that more teens, the headline was more teens abuse ADHD stimulants. In pediatrics, it said there was a 76% jump in ADHD abuse among teens in the past year. Of course, when that came out, it was the first of 2009, so we'd be talking about, or the middle of 2009, so we'd be talking about the year 2008. And then finally, another study, the headline in Reuters, bipolar diagnosis jumps in young children. The study was in the Journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. And again, children aged 2 to 5 being diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and the number being diagnosed having doubled over the past year. And, again, antipsychotic drugs being used to treat those drugs. So those are just some studies to show what we're dealing with in terms of the use of any of these psychiatric drugs, of these psychiatric medications. Not only a rise, a more than double in prescription of them alone across the United States, but we're also talking about younger and younger. I mean, you can't get much younger than 2, other than diagnosing them as they come out of the womb, that they have depression or that they have bipolar disorder. I mean, we're down to 2-year-olds now being diagnosed with this. And so, and the number of children being diagnosed doubling, and the number of them being put on antipsychotic medication doubling, with no earthly idea what it's going to do to them long term, by the way, because you don't do, studies are not done on those, in those kinds of, or have not been done in the past, on children. And so since this is just occurring, the theory is, and the thought behind it is, well, they're just little people, okay? They're just small people, and so we just treat them the same way that we treat adults, that we treat others, and we just give them the same medications that we give others. And again, if you think of a human being as nothing more than an animal, as Dr. Smith talked about last night, and the idea that, you know, we're just talking about animals, and so you can use animal studies and equate them with people, well, the same kind of theory holds true. If we're just animals, then we're just dealing with little animals, little people, and so we can just give them the same medication, maybe in smaller doses, obviously, but we can still give them the same medication. So we have no idea what the long term, in terms of what it's going to be doing to these kids long term physically and those kinds of things. But the point of all that is just to say, this is what is happening in America. This is the reality of what's happening and what you're going to be dealing with as you deal with counselees, as you deal with people in your church. You know, more and more we are going to see those of you that are ministers in church, pastors, children's ministers, youth ministers, more and more you're going to have parents either already having put their children on these medications because the doctor told them to, or coming to you for advice. What should I do? My doctor says I should put my 3-year-old on this medication. Should I do it? And so, you know, being informed, number one, and being connected to a doctor that you can trust, that you can talk with about this, or that you can help them to go talk to about this, is extremely important. And so the question then becomes, is all of this leading to abuse and addiction? Well, let's talk about terms first of all, before we answer that question, because it's important that we understand what we're talking about, because a lot of times the answer to that question is, well, there's not addiction. These drugs do not lead to addiction. Okay? Well, addiction talks about a chronic relapsing use of a drug. This is just a typical addiction. This definition comes from a substance abuse textbook. Chronic relapsing use of a drug characterized by compulsive drug seeking and use, craving and continued use, despite harm to self and others. And if you look in the in the DSM that we've talked about, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. This is kind of a summary of that. You'll see several different criteria there, and all of them will kind of summarize into this kind of a thing. It'll talk about time limits and so forth in the DSM. But as far as the characteristics, this is a kind of a definition of what addiction is. What we need to go back to is talk about what about abuse and dependence, which are two other designations that are used in the secular world. One is using a prescription. The abuse is simply using a prescription drug that was not prescribed for you. So in other words, using somebody else's drug if it's not something that was not prescribed for you, or that was taken only for the experience of the feeling it caused. And so, and again, we're talking here about prescription drugs. We're talking here in the realm. Obviously, it's also abuse to use an illegal drug, okay, to go and use something, buy something from somebody that's illegal and use it. That would certainly be abuse. But here we're talking about using prescription drugs, drugs that were legally prescribed for something, but now they're being used in a way that they were not intended to be used. They're either being used by you when they were prescribed for somebody else, or you're taking it for the feeling that it gives you. You're not doing it for the reason that it was given. It may have been given to you for this reason, but you're using it for a different reason, to get the experience or the feeling behind it. And then dependence is when that drug becomes tolerated. In other words, its effects begin to be diminish, and so you have to take more and more of it to get the same effect, or you have to take different, stronger drugs or combination drugs. You have to combine it with another drug. A lot of times what happens, and one of the dangerous things is, especially with young people, but also with adults, is they may combine, one combination that's often done is alcohol with other drugs, okay? Because, alcohol is kind of, it's legal, and it's kind of the available everywhere. It's still the most abused drug in America, far and above any other drug. And so, but in and of itself, it can be dangerous, but certainly combined with other drugs, it becomes very dangerous. And so, because you become tolerant, because it seems like it's not working as well, you take more of it, or you take other drugs with it, or you move up to stronger drugs to get more of an effect, and so forth. And so that's tolerance. And you suffer withdrawal when the use is discontinued. And so to stop using it means some kind of withdrawal symptoms, from minor things to very major, painful physical effects to be able to move from it. So what you'll read many times in the literature is that these drugs are not addictive, but they are abused, and they do lead to dependence. Okay, so your terminology, you have to be careful of the terminology, and so you'll read many times, these drugs are completely safe, they've never shown to be addictive. Okay, well, they have been shown to be abused, and they have been shown to cause dependence, and they have been shown to lead to the use of other drugs as well, that are addictive and that do lead to even more dangerous things. They in and of themselves are dangerous, but they lead to even more dangerous things. All right, let's talk about a little bit of that as we think about this whole concept of the abuse and addiction of these things. One of the largest studies done every year when it comes to substance abuse, especially among young people, a large sampled study done annually of thousands and thousands of young people in high school and college is done by the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University, called CASA for short, just Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse. And so if you want to know about what's going on in terms of what drugs are the most popular at any given time, which ones are on the rise, which ones are on the decrease, those kinds of things in any given year, you will have very up-to-date, like last year's, information on that site. And so typically, when you see a change, for example, in the ads on TV and how they're trying to fight drug use and so forth, it comes out of these studies almost inevitably. In other words, these studies are so large, the sample is so large and so forth, that if there's a change in what they see in terms of drugs of choice or what seems to be leading kids towards certain drugs or whatever, you'll see changes in the ads, in the way they produce the ads. It has that much impact on us. But they are very very accurate in terms of describing, I think, what's going on in our culture, being descriptive about what's going on in our culture at any given time. Now, here's some things that come from their study. Between 1992 and 2005, abuse of psychotropic drugs, psychiatric medication, just another term for psychiatric medication, the term that they use. And by the way, on the previous sheet, on the previous one at the top of it, I had what were some of the drugs that they would include as those psychotropic or psychiatric drugs. Well, they would include things like central nervous system depressants like Valium and Xanax as examples, central nervous system stimulants like Ritalin and Adderall, typical drugs used for ADHD, ADD, antidepressants like Paxil, Zoloft, Prozac. Those would be examples of what we're talking about here. Between 1992 and 2005, abuse of these drugs increased 94%. Now, we're not just talking about prescribing these drugs. We've already talked about the fact that they more than doubled in terms of prescribing of them. What we're talking about here is abuse of these drugs, using them for using drugs that were not prescribed to them or using them in inappropriate ways. Okay, that's what we're talking about here. We're not just talking about prescribing of them. During that time, between 12 to 17-year-olds, there was an increase of 212% increase in that particular age group. So where did most of that rise come from? It came among teenagers. Okay, it's coming among those who are teenagers. That means that nearly one in every five teenagers, 12 to 17 years old, about 4.5 million, almost 20% of teenagers were abusing one of these kinds of drugs. Okay? We're going to talk about why that is in just a second. But that is simply, these are simply what the descriptive facts, descriptive study shows about what's going on in our country. Now, one in every 10 teenagers are 2.3 million has tried a prescription stimulant like Ritalin or Adderall without a doctor's order. So in other words, not that the doctor prescribed Ritalin or Adderall to them, they used it because it was available, because they thought it might be, you know, in some cases they thought it would, they were wanting to experiment with it and see what the effect of it was. In some cases they were told, well, you know, it'll help you stay awake for a test. Okay, it'll help you study better. You know, it was prescribed to my sister because she has trouble, you know, concentrating in school. You're having trouble in school. Why don't you try this stuff? Okay, that kind of thing is taking place. So one in 10 teenagers at least tried it. At least gave it a shot. Okay. Here's some more information. This is a quote right out of CASA's study, which, by the way, was entitled, and you can find it on their website. It's simply CASA Columbia, C-A-S-A Columbia, for the acronym for the title of it, and then the university where it's at, casacolumbia.org. And you can find this study. You can find lots of other information about substance abuse if you're interested in that. If you have a teenager or working with teenagers or working with young adults and so forth, you particularly may find this site interesting and useful, if nothing else, just in knowing what's going on. You know, what are kids experimenting with? What are they trying? What's popular right now? But one of their conclusions or one of their statements right out of the study was teens who abuse these controlled prescription drugs are twice. Now, I want you to watch what happens here, okay? Because we're not just talking about them using, you know, the Adderall or the Ritalin, you know, using you know, their friends' Adderall or Ritalin or whatever, or their parents' you know, Valium or their brother or sister's, you know, Ritalin. We're talking about this opening them up to a whole new world, okay? Because one thing that happens with drugs is drug use, especially drug use that's abuse, that's not not used the way it's supposed to be used. Once you head down that path, it's very rare that you just stop with a drug that you start with. Okay, that's just, you know, that's just has been shown time and time again. Teens who abuse these controlled prescription drugs are twice as likely to use alcohol, 5 times as likely to use marijuana, 12 times as likely to use heroin, 15 times as likely to use ecstasy, 21 times as likely to use cocaine as those who do not abuse those substances. You know, when you're thinking about the Ritalin, you know, when parents are thinking about the Ritalin in their medicine cabinet, they don't just need to be thinking about the side effects of that Ritalin, which they do need to be thinking about, but they also need to be thinking about this is a gateway, a possible gateway drug to other drugs. Right in their medicine cabinet, they have gateway drugs to other drugs. And so we have to be very, very careful about this. And we need to inform, you know, and those of you especially that work with youth and with children and so forth, you know, these are some of the things you need to help them to think through as they're thinking about these drugs and so forth for their children. And when they come to you with those kinds of questions, these are the kinds of things that you need to show them. You know, they need to know the side effects of those drugs. And a good doctor will show the side effects of those drugs, but not every doctor will do that. You know, I've had lots of medication prescribed for me for various things over the years. And in all those years, I was telling my wife this on the way in today, I really appreciate the doctor that I have right now, my kidney specialist. I'm on a particular anti-rejection drug, and he found another drug that had just come out recently that, first of all, he's very careful about making sure that, you know, it's been around for a while and it's shown good success and so forth before he even suggested to his patients. But then he thought that I might want to use it because the drug I'm on right now causes me to shake some. It's one of the side effects. And so he said this drug would probably stop that shaking because I've talked to him about it several times. He said, but before you do it, he said, let me give you the side effects. Let me show you the study. Let me give you a website for you to go on and look at the side effects, look at the studies, and I want you to make an informed decision about it. Well, I went on there, found out about a third of the people who switched from the medication I was on to the other medication wound up having a rejection episode of their kidneys. So I decided I'm not going to make that change. I'm going to live with the shaking. You know, it's one of the things that I can live with rather than making that change. But how many doctors do that? How many doctors take the time to walk with their patients through the side effects and let them be a part of the decision? Usually, it's just okay. You know, here's what you have. Here's what you need to take. Go take it. And we're intimidated by that, and we don't want to question our doctor, and so we just take the medication and move on. And that's what a lot of parents are doing. And so I'm not, you know, I'm saying I understand that. I understand being, you know, that, you know, it's kind of like when I take my car to my mechanic. You know, if he tells me the, you know, distributor is bad, I just have to say okay. I have to believe you because I don't know anything about car engines. The same thing with my physical body. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I appreciated my doctor who says, but I do want you to know this about this medication, some of the things it may do to you if you decide to take it. It may happen if you decide to take it. I want you to be well informed. And so we may have to help our counselees and our parents, especially who are dealing with their children, to get informed, to say, you know, to read the side effects, to get online and read the side effects, or to ask their doctor to tell them about the side effects and those kinds of things. One of the side effects they're probably not going to talk about in any of that literature is what we just talked about. And so tell them to go online and look at the CASA study and see what the potential of, as far as a gateway drug is concerned, and some of the possible possibilities there. I mean, I'm very, very much believe that God gave children to parents, and it's the parents' ultimately responsibility to make decisions about their children. So I'm not going to tell them, do not do this, okay? But I am going to help them think through every aspect of it, everything they can think through. You know, what are some scriptures they want to need to look at first of all? Secondly, what are some of the realities about the substance itself that they need to look at, the side effects, the possible outcomes of it. So help them to think through these things, to look at every aspect of it. Here's another quote from the study as they were looking at why this gateway, why this rise in use of these drugs, first of all, and the abuse of these drugs, and then why is this happening? Why are we seeing this take place? And by the way, prescription drugs now are these kinds of drugs that we're talking about in young people are now the third most abused substance. Alcohol still number one, marijuana number two. These are now number three on the hit list. So these are it's made the top three now. It's top three with a bullet. Okay, it's headed upward. So overall, drug use in America is down in terms of abuse of drugs. You know, the overall numbers are down, except for a few drugs. And one of the ones that is drastically increasing, has made its way quickly up the charts, are these pharmaceuticals, are these psychiatric drugs that are being misused by kids out there. One factor driving the increase, they say, in controlled prescription drug abuse is that these drugs can be found in abundance in family medicine cabinets in every town in America, and they're just a click away on the internet. One of the things that they talk about in the study is, and the parents need to be aware of, is that they sell these drugs on the internet. And you can go on the internet, and of course they say you have to be a certain age to be able to do it. But how do they know? You know, kids will lie, guess what? They will tell lies. And so they can get these things off the internet. So they, again, parents need to, it's another whole nother issue. The internet's a whole nother issue that I'd love to spend some time, another session talking about, but watch out for the internet. They can be acquired with relative ease from doctors. Absolutely. You know, most of these, it's just a matter of going to the doctors, describing certain symptoms, and you're going to get a prescription. Now, we've heard from doctors in this, this weekend, you know, we just heard Dr. Ramirez talk about the time he spends, the questions he asks. Very few doctors do that, okay? Most doctors just, you know, a few questions, a few symptoms, and boom, this is what it is, this is what you get. So relative ease from doctors, friends, relatives, classmates, I think every kid knows somebody who's on some psychotropic medication, okay? It's just, you know, it's so common now. It's very easy to get. The fact that controlled prescription drugs are approved by the FDA and prescribed by a physician leads many to conclude that they are safe even when abused. Okay, and there were many statements given by young people in their studies. That was one of the things that came out was, you know, I don't know if it's naivete or just, you know, stupidity or wishful thinking of the teenager or whatever, but, you know, they believed that because a physician had prescribed it and they weren't buying it and it was in their parents' medicine cabinet or friends, you got it from a friend who had it prescribed, that it was safe, you know, that it wasn't buying something off the street corner. Right? So it was safe. Well, again, these are still Schedule II drugs. What does that mean? Well, Schedule I drug means it's illegal. It has no known medical use. Okay, those are what we call the illegal drugs that we tend to think of. Schedule II simply means that it's a drug that is just as dangerous as the Schedule I drug. It's just, you can get it by prescription. Okay, you can only get it by prescription because only a doctor can prescribe it. But you can get it. It does have a shown medical use. But it's dangerous. Schedule II means it's dangerous. Leads to high possibility of dependence and addiction. And all of these drugs are Schedule II drugs. They're not illegal, so they're not Schedule I, but they are Schedule II, which is the highest level. You know, you got other schedules that are like, you know, all the way down to the stuff you can go into the drugstore and buy off the counter. But these are the highest level of dangerous legal drugs. And we're giving these to our young people as young as 2 years old, and they're in the medicine cabinets, and it's assumed that because, you know, they're prescribed and so forth, that they're, you know, they're fairly safe. And even though parents may know better, kids don't. They think it's okay because they're not buying it from a drug dealer. And as they conclude, sadly, nothing could be further from the truth. absolutely is not the truth. Just very quickly, let me conclude. We're getting one thing I've learned: you don't take people past their lunchtime. So we're going to get out of here in just a minute. But this study was another group that does a large study every year, and that's the Partnership for a Drug-Free America. And their study this past year, was called Generation RX, Generation Prescription. Why? Because this rise of use of prescription medication. More than 3 in 5 teens in their study said that it was easy to get medication from their parents. Half of them said it was easy to get it through other people's prescriptions. And more than half said that, quote, pain relievers are available everywhere. So, you know, get them from friends, get them from different kinds of places. 2 in 5, from the same study, 2 in 5 believed that these medications were, quote, much safer to use than illegal drugs. And almost a third, 32%, believed that prescription medications cannot be addictive, okay? They can't lead to addiction. Well, one of the reasons is because you keep hearing that in the news and in the literature and so forth. But they can be lead to dependence, okay, which is basically the same thing as addiction. Let me just give a couple quotes, and I want to close with a little cartoon. This was one from the CASA study. A 21-year-old in their study. I realized that taking drugs was fun, so I wanted to experiment. Before that, I was against it, but this, and she was talking about Adderall, is what she was taking, which is a stimulant used for ADHD and ADD, was a pill from a doctor that helped you take tests better. Okay, that's what they think. It's just a pill that helps you take, some kind of magic pill that just helps you take tests better. It's a stimulant, a Schedule II drug, okay? There couldn't be anything bad about it. Okay, and then in an ABC News report that I have a transcript from, a teenager there was interviewed about these things, and she said, it all started with Ritalin and Adderall. I started taking them every day to get high, okay, again, not prescribed by a doctor for ADHD or anything, and pretty soon it didn't work anymore. Okay, here's the gateway, and I needed something more. I needed something bigger, faster, boost. Okay, there's your gateway. Okay, it's the very same thing. Very same idea. And so, you know, here, though, is what our kids are being told. You know, nonsense. It's not addictive. As long as you take it every day on schedule, you won't have to worry about addiction. Okay? Well, try to get off of it. Okay? When they try to get off of it, that's when the problems happen. So, you know, I had some stuff here about dealing with addictions overall, but just quickly some things for you to tell your, you know, some things to start with in terms of these things. First of all, parents need to be very wary about pharmaceuticals, period. Themselves using them, because number one, they're going to have them around the house. Number two, their example is going to be followed by their kids. Okay, so them using them, and certainly them getting their kids involved in using them. So be very wary. Help your parents to be very wary about it, and again, help them to think through every aspect of this and work with a doctor who will help them think through every aspect and work with them through every aspect of this. Then they need to make sure that they monitor and know what's going on with their kids, that they secure any drugs that are in their house. Don't just assume because it's a prescription drug, you know, that my kids are going to know they shouldn't get into it if it's not theirs. You know, if it's in the cabinet and it's not theirs, they're not going to, well, yeah, they might. And so, and don't presume that, you know, your child is going to be the child that's not going to do that. So teach them to make sure that they keep them secure, and then get rid of them when they make the decision, or when the doctor says to stop using them, or when they finally make the decision, I don't need to use these things anymore, after you've counseled them for a while and they want to get off of them. Tell them to make sure that they take what's left of their medication and flush it down the toilet, get rid of it in some way. Probably don't flush it down the toilet. You don't want. It's kind of funny. They did a study on water in Arlington, where I go to church, and the water there is filled with all these pharmaceuticals. It's just kind of amazing. So we're getting them sometimes, even when we just drink our water out of the thing. So think about that when you're maybe that's why we're all just a little happier all the time. But but get rid of them in an appropriate way. Okay, I was going to say flush them down the toilet, but don't do that. But anyway, those are just some things to start with. You know, I'm sorry I can't get into some of the, don't have time, and I knew I probably wouldn't, to get into some of the how do you actually deal with somebody who's already, who's using abuse. Come and take my course, or go through the training with us, or maybe we'll have a future conference on substance abuse and addiction, and we'll talk more in detail, spend a whole weekend talking about this.